Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante, along with Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Another fun weekend of football, Dustin.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun last weekend. I think you look at the schedule and maybe you don't think that some of those games are going to be good. But we had a lot of really fun, exciting games, I think more so than people expected in week two.
Yes, it definitely was for me, because I know going into the weekend, I do a show with someone who does his picks for the week, and we take like the five or six biggest games. We had trouble finding what I considered, you know, five or six big games. And now we always include Penn State, which turned into a big game, Dustin. Yeah. Here at Penn State area, we're all still trying to get over the fact that this defense gave up 24 points to Bowling Green in the first half. Bowling Green looked unstoppable.
Yeah, I saw a joke, and I thought it was very appropriate that because people might know that Connor Bazelak used to play at Indiana, and that Tom Allen finally got the best out of quarterback Connor Bazelak in that game. Yeah, I think what happened, because I still think Penn State's incredibly talented on the defensive side. I think they got a lot of playmakers. This might have been just one of those one-off games coming up. I think it also has to be hard when you play West Virginia, a rivalry game on the road, your first week, and then they're 18 to 22-year-olds. As much as James Franklin has that 1-0 mindset, like looking at Bowling Green on the schedule, you're probably like, okay, we should roll over these guys, and then all of a sudden you're in a dogfight. But one of the problems with Tom Allen when he was at Indiana was he was preaching takeaways, which is a good thing, but it came at the loss of tackling, form tackling. And so they struggled to get guys onto the ground at Indiana. And I think you saw a little bit of that, or a lot of bit of that, throughout the game, especially in the first half against Bowling Green, because they were not getting turnovers and they were not getting guys to the ground. So that's going to be an area that they focus on, I think, in these next 2 weeks.
Oh, I certainly hope so, Dustin. You and I chatted about that a little bit. And, you know, I was trying to find a reason. During the game, I text with a lot of folks, a lot of obviously Penn State fans who were exercising their right to complain about coaching. Yep. Many folks, it was kind of split, though. I got to admit, it was split. Some people wanted Tom Allen fired. Some people wanted James Franklin fired, okay? So it was kind of a mixed reaction. And one of the statements was they should be fired because, you know, for the lack of tackling done by the players. And my question was, well, they seem to tackle fine against West Virginia. Yeah. So what do you think happened during this week? Did the coaches say, hold on, stop practice? That was a form tackle you made there. We're going to have none of that. No more wrapping up and taking guys down, all right? Just sort of put a shoulder in, bounce off them, and let them keep going. Okay, that's the way we're going to coach it here. You know, that doesn't happen. So I'm putting it more on the players.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And again, I think that there's just that 18 to 22-year-old mentality. When you open against a power four team on the road, you get a big win. That was a game that you were not an underdog in, but there were some people that thought West Virginia was going to give you a fight. And then again, you look at Bowling Green on the schedule. I also think a little bit of this, not the tackling part of it, but I do think that there is, when you had a guy like Bazelak who played under Tom Allen, he probably understands what that defense is going to try to do, so he can, you know, pick and choose his spots. They probably had a little bit better offensive game plan than some of the other opponents they'll face just because of that familiarity. But yeah, I'm with you. That was an uncharacteristic performance from the Penn State defense. I looked at the score and thought, oh, Bowling Green got an early touchdown, 7-0. That's going to be about all we see from this team before the Penn State defense turns it up. But as it turns out, they just kind of had their way with the Nittany Lions in that first half. But fortunately, you know what? Survive in advance is a phrase we use for the NCAA tournament, but I think it applied to Penn State and Bowling Green on Saturday.
Well, it did, and it seemed like Bowling Green came in with a game plan, which was the short passing game, and I was trying to find the statistic that I had around here somewhere, and I'm probably not going to find it. But underneath, passes less than 10 yards down the field, it was just incredible the numbers that Connor Bazelak had. And by the way, in the first half, he completed 16 of 20. That's 80%. And one of the thoughts, I was talking to someone else on our show previously about there were so many close calls throughout the country and trying to define what's going on, why is it? And one of my theories that I want to put out to you is, with the transfer portal, are we seeing things like Connor Bazelak, who has been around forever? This is not an 18, 19, 20-year-old. This is, what, 22, 23, 24-year-old who's been around for a while, has seen it all, under control. Yes, he's had exposure to, you know, what Tom Allen wants to do on defense, but he put on quite a show.
Yeah, he did. I think that that's a good point. I think with the transfer portal, and we're still, I think, still dealing with that COVID year of eligibility. So you're right. I think you've got guys who are 23, 24, maybe 25, I don't know, grown men who are playing against 18, 19-year-olds. And so I think that makes a difference. I also think, and I don't want to interject college basketball references too much into this, but a lot of teams that get to the Final Four and make deep tournament runs are veteran teams. And you might start to see some of those MAC teams, Sun Belt teams, even though some of their best players can maybe enter the transfer portal, if you're able to keep and retain a cohesive unit, especially on the offensive and defensive lines, and bring in a quarterback like Connor Bazelak and bring in some playmakers, I think that that's going to go a long way. So I think that there is this balance. I don't want to say balance of power, because Penn State, I think, 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, they're going to win that game by probably 4 touchdowns or more. They just caught them on the wrong day. But I do think that over time, what you're going to see is teams can just grab missing pieces, and a lot of those offensive and defensive linemen from those lower ranks are going to, they're going to stick together for 4 or 5 years, and that's what's going to make those teams particularly dangerous in this new era.
That's a good point. If you've got a team, again, using the basketball analogy, remember, you know, Kentucky just played players that were one and dones, you know, and they were more talented than every team they were playing against, but the other teams were together for a while. So if you've got a team like Bowling Green, well, you know, the NFL is not going to come knocking on their door after, you know, the minimum 3 years on campus. So they can have guys who've been together for 4 or 5 years and show that cohesiveness, and, you know, add to it from the portal, they could bring in a quarterback that I believe he started at Missouri first, right? Yep. Then went to Indiana. So this is a guy with at least a Southeast Conference pedigree and a Big Ten pedigree, not something a Bowling Green is used to having. Plus, he's a grown man. So I think that was a big part of it. Penn State wasn't the only interesting game in the Big Ten, as you alluded to. Let's hit a couple of these others. The premier game, which didn't turn out to look that way, was Texas just ran all over Michigan. And I got to give you credit again this week, my friend. You're the one who's been saying all along, you're not looking for much from Michigan. And that's exactly what you got. Not much.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, even though Texas put up 31 points, I still think Michigan's defense is pretty solid and can compete with a lot of teams in the Big Ten, but their offense is so bad. Their offensive line, they cannot get any push. What I can't remember, I'm going to have to look up really quick and see what their average was, but I think it was less than three. Nope, it was just at 3.7 yards per carry, but they ended the game with 82 rushing yards. That's not how Michigan was successful in the Jim Harbaugh era. That's not how they're going to continue to be successful. Davis Warren, they can't stretch the field. Like, I don't, there just aren't a lot of offensive weapons. So they have a team that can beat inferior talent, like the Maryland, the Michigan States. They have team. They have enough talent to beat those kind of teams. But then when they go up against elite teams, and they've got another one here in a few weeks when USC comes to town, they're going to be in. They're going to be in some trouble. Like, I think that this is a maximum ceiling of an 8-4 team. That's what it has written all over it. I wouldn't be surprised if they are just happy to get to a bowl game by the end of the season.
Well, they do have US, as you mentioned, USC coming up, and all of a sudden, doesn't this make that a huge game for both teams?
Yeah. Yeah, that's huge because I mean, USC's got that. They're coming off that confident. They got that week one win against LSU. They just shut out Utah State. This was a defense that ranked 121st nationally a season ago, and they just shut out. The fact that they were able to shut out anybody is impressive. And now, Jim, they get 2 weeks. I don't mean to throw up the Trojan peace sign or whatever it is. Fight on there. But they get 2 weeks to prepare for Michigan. So that could be another lopsided affair.
Well, if Michigan were to lose that game, and it sounds like that's what you're predicting, yes. I won't put pressure on you yet. We'll get a chance to talk about that when that game comes up. They still have Oregon and Ohio State on their schedule, so that prediction of 8-4 doesn't look so bad. It looks like very realistic.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was kind of looking at this Texas game. I mean, 8-4 was kind of my ceiling for them coming into the season, but more so after that Texas game. I thought that would be a good measuring stick. If this was like a 17-14, 21-20 type of game where they kept it close, I might have a little bit more faith that maybe they could get to 9-10 wins. They were not, even when they got stops on Texas, it wasn't like Texas controlled that game from start to finish. And I don't think anybody ever thought it was close. Ever.
No, and Michigan needed a late touchdown to make it 31-12. Yes. It was 31-6. So, I'm with you on that one. And it looks to be, the case. I wanted to hit some more games here with you. And we only have, a half minute left here before the end of this segment. So I'll hold those games off. But just in general, is Texas now one of those very – should we put Texas up with Ohio State and Georgia?
Yeah, I think so. I think even though I don't think that highly of Michigan, I think the fact that they went on the road, got a big win in Ann Arbor, and were that dominant, I think they've got the off. I think they're good on both sides of the ball. I don't know if they're Georgia good or Ohio State good, but I think that they are deserving of that number three ranking or the number two ranking that they just got in the AP poll.
If not them, who, as far as being up with those teams. All right, that's it, quarter one. Lots more to talk about with Dustin when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte from Sports Illustrated. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about Big Ten football. But before we get there, just to circle back to Penn State and Bowling Green, I found my notes, Dustin, from this past week's game. Do you know in passes from 0 to 9 yards, Connor Bazelak was 17 of 22 for 133 yards.
That's so pretty good. That's pretty good.
I think there was a strategy there.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder more so you're happy you got the win, and obviously there was a lot of concern at Beaver Stadium on Saturday as that game unfolded. It also makes me wonder, did they reveal the blueprint to beating Penn State this season? Because I think – there are going to be some teams, particularly Ohio State, that can stretch the field, and they're not going to have as much of a problem with that secondary. But is this a blueprint that other teams are going to follow and try to upset Penn State throughout the season? I think that might be, you know, it's you win the game, but did you, I don't think they're going to lose the war in terms of, like, I don't think they're going to drop four or five games, but do you lose a game now that maybe puts your college football playoff hopes in question moving forward?
Well, in first blush, that was concerning, but I also think that it was a pretty vanilla defense that Penn State was playing, thinking that's what they all they needed to do with Bowling Green.
Sure.
I think the good thing about this is you'd rather have this happen against a Bowling Green. And for what it's worth, they did make the adjustment in the second half. Bowling Green didn't score until their last drive, their last possession, and when Penn State went into a prevent defense, you know, and just made Bowling Green have to march down the field, and still they settled for a field goal. So I'm not sure. I think other teams will try it. And, you know, I'm not here to make Connor Bazelak a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Right.
But everything he did was right. Everything the offensive coordinator did was right. You know, and there was a touchdown pass that he made that the pressure was on him. He's on his back foot, just looked like he was throwing it up for grabs, and it was a perfect throw in the corner of the end zone. Just really well done. So that Bowling Green also did everything right. And it's awful that I have to even use an expression like that, because it shouldn't matter how right Bowling Green is. It shouldn't matter when they're playing at Penn State. But so it'll be interesting to see how things are going forward. I'd like to think that, you know, Penn State has a bye week coming up. I'd like to think that these are going to be very uncomfortable practices for the team over the next 2 weeks.
I think uncomfortable practices and probably some, I don't think difficult conversations, but straightforward conversations among the staff. Because, yeah, you can't play like that when conference season rolls around and expect to get a lot of wins. But which is weird. Again, I know I've mentioned this a couple times, but I was complimentary about Penn State, and they played full four full quarters, or at least as much as they could with that rain delay. Like, they looked good from start to finish against West Virginia, which has kind of been the knock on Penn State. Sometimes they struggle to get things going, and that kind of reared its ugly head in that first half against Bowling Green. Penn State's always been a second-half team. They're good at making adjustments. James Franklin's been really good at that in his time in Happy Valley, but you would like to see you get off to a little bit better start than they had last weekend.
Yes, and you know, what often happens is it's on the offensive side of the ball that concern. The offense played really well, Dustin. And if what I like to do after a game is look at the, you know, the drive chart and try to figure, okay, when a drive is not successful, what happens?
Yes.
And when Penn State punted the ball, it was typically because of a self-inflicted wound. There were way too many penalties. There was a third down drop pass that, in fact, they had a penalty that took them back to third and 17. And, a receiver then had a ball hit him right in the chest and just bounce off, which would have been a first down. And I know this wasn't a punt, but Drew Aller, and I'm not that concerned about it, but is one, the pass that you question and go, oh, why did you even throw that?
Yeah.
Was an interception in the red zone. So Penn State's offense was not going to be stopped by Bowling Green's defense. It was only self-inflicted wounds. So let's get back to some more of this Big Ten conversation, because there were some interesting games. And I think Illinois, for that, they be a ranked Kansas team. That's got to be a huge win for the Fighting Bielemas.
Yeah, I think Brett Bielema has had a lot of big wins in his time at Wisconsin, Arkansas. He's picked up a couple at Illinois, but that has to be among the biggest, because they had a pretty tough schedule, and all of a sudden you beat a ranked Kansas team, and now you get a win over Central Michigan this week, and you're 3-0, you're halfway to bowl eligibility after struggling last season. Then you have right now, what's two ranked opponents in back-to-back weeks on the road, Nebraska and Penn State, this team needs some momentum because the schedule ramps up a lot. That was an absolutely huge win. I still think like they still are going to have Purdue. They've got Minnesota, Michigan State, Rutgers, Northwestern, plenty of wins on that schedule, but I think they needed to go 3-0 in non-conference play to get some of that momentum. The thing that really stood out to me is I thought that this was going to be an Illinois team that had to depend on its offense and score a lot of points to beat teams because I just didn't think the defense was there. Some people told me, like, watch out for this secondary. Four turnovers they forced, three interceptions. Xavier Scott was phenomenal. I think he was also their leading tackler that game. This Illinois team, they've got some issues on the defensive line, but their secondary is up there among probably the best in the Big Ten.
Well, it all of a sudden, it makes it very interesting. At the end of this month, Penn State plays Illinois at home.
Yeah.
And their only game between now, they have a bye and then Kent State. And boy, the Kent State game better not be like this Bowling Green game. But even if Penn State, you know, does the expected, blows them out, you still might question Penn State going up against Illinois. So it's going to be interesting to see. Although we will find out a little more when Illinois plays Nebraska. Another game, perhaps the biggest win for a Big Ten team is Nebraska. They really took it to Colorado, which, by the way, I always like to pat myself on the back, as I think you're beginning to learn. I bet Nebraska in that game. So nice. I had the Cornhuskers. I also had Penn State, but that's another discussion. But I had Nebraska, and boy, I'm not sure that was as close as the score either.
No, it wasn't. And I think you walk away from that game saying, yeah, Matt Rule's taking this program. You know, they're on the verge of getting to that next level. And I don't think Colorado is the best measuring stick because I don't think they're that good. But we have not seen Nebraska really dominate another Power Four team like that in a long time. And so I think that there's some faith that, hey, look, Dylan Raiola's numbers were okay. They weren't great. But for a freshman to be in that environment and not make a big mistake, not have a turnover, critical. That's huge. Nebraska struggled with turnovers for years, and they were able to finally, you know, kind of exercise those demons. They get another game against Northern Iowa this week. I think the one concern is Nebraska played really well that first half on both sides of the ball. They were able to rack up the points. The second half, I think they got a little too conservative. Now, when you have a 28-3 lead, 28-0 lead, you don't need to be throwing the ball, 50 yards down the field, right? So I understand the conservative play call. I would like to see them run up the score a little bit more just to show that they could play a full 60 minutes, but they also didn't need to. So I think there still are some question marks about Nebraska, but I think that's as good of a win as they've had in years, I think, for that program.
I would have liked to have seen them run up the score too, just because it was Deion Sanders in Colorado.
Fair, yes.
But again, we're looking at the schedule quite a bit because it is such a factor now mm-hmm. with these larger conferences, and you don't play everybody. But Nebraska starts their Big Ten schedule with Illinois, then Purdue, then Rutgers, then Indiana. You know, that could be a 7-0 team when they travel to Columbus.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, they've got what's going to be really interesting is if Illinois wins this weekend, we could have a top 25 matchup between Illinois and Nebraska on a Friday night in Lincoln. That could be a lot of fun. And then, I think what's going to be another big test for them. Obviously, they got a test with Colorado. They're going to get a test with Illinois. They've got to go. I'm not saying this is a test because it's Purdue. I'm saying it's a test because that's going to be their first road game. So now you ask, how does a freshman quarterback handle a road environment when he doesn't have, he's not playing in front of, 90,000 people because it's Ross-Ade Stadium, right? But he doesn't have 60,000 people supporting him. They're going the other way. So how do they handle that? So on paper and from a talent perspective, I think they're better than all four of those teams and those opponents that you just mentioned. But this is still a team growing. They still have to get to that next step, take those baby steps. So I think there's still some question marks about this team over the next four games. But yeah, to start 3-0 and be in the top, they'll be 3-0 after they play Northern Iowa. And to be in the top 25, this is what Matt Rhule does. Takes time, but he's getting the job done already.
Playing at Purdue, that notoriously rough place to play, Dustin.
Hey, if you're a ranked team, you don't want to go in there. They've got more top five wins than anybody in the country as an unranked team.
Sounds like a Purdue guy there talking. The one other game that I thought was of note was Michigan State and Maryland. These are both middle of the pack at best teams, but this was a game I think where both teams had to look at the schedule and say, that's a win we need.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I was stunned that Michigan State won this game. Look, they need to coin the phrase like cardiac Spartans or something, because Aiden Childs is going to give Michigan State fans a lot of heart problems. He can make any throw, but then he also tries to make every throw. And that's both a good thing and a bad thing. Three touchdowns, three interceptions. I still am not – when Michigan State plays a really good defense, they're going to have some trouble. They're aim big, miss big. I think they're going to be an exciting team for both good and bad reasons, but Maryland, your defense needs fixed, I think. Their secondary is not good.
I'll tell you what, I'd had and have very little confidence in Maryland after losing the quarterback that they've had the last several years. So it's a different team. That's it for quarter number two. Stick around. Lots more to talk about with Dustin.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's Dustin. We're talking mostly Big Ten football. And Dustin, we were talking about the quality games that were going on in the Big Ten. But there were also some of these absolutely ridiculous out-of-conference games playing a directional school. Here, let me give you a quick little stat. You combine scores from Western Illinois, Western Michigan, Eastern Michigan. 163-12, Dustin. 163-12. Let me put this into perspective. If you gave those three directional schools 150 points and bet them, you, my friend, would have still lost.
And Indiana was responsible for 77 of those points. I mean, that was, yeah, you look across, and that's not it. Like Minnesota, 48-0 over Rhode Island. Rutgers, 49-17 against Akron. Like, the only one that was, well, there was a couple that... USC 48-0 on Utah State. The one that was a little bit there were two that were concerning, but I think for different reasons. Oregon and then Boise State. They had a squeaker there. Wisconsin 27-13 on South Dakota. Very ho hum on Wisconsin this year. I don't know what Luke Fickell's doing, and a win's a win, but they have not looked good through their first two games.
No, they haven't, and it's how much judgment should you make, what conclusions? And you know, we have, as Penn Staters, have to look at this Bowling Green game and say, you know, how much credence do we put in that performance? Mm-hmm. And thank goodness for the Fighting Irish, you know, to take the take right. the attention away. It could have been a lot worse. They could have played really poorly against the MAC team and lost. And it brings up something you and I were discussing between segments is, you know, the schedule. And you were talking about Ron Walters and what he had to say about the schedule. Why don't you go ahead and relay that to our listeners?
Yeah, so last week during his weekly radio show, Purdue head coach Ryan Walters was asked basically, what's your philosophy on scheduling in non-conference play? And for those who aren't familiar, Jeff Brohm, when he was at Purdue, was notorious for wanting to load up Purdue's schedule with, at the time, Power 5 opponents. So it wasn't uncommon for Purdue to play 11 Power 5 games when you throw in the 9 conference games. Ryan Walters does not have that same philosophy, especially now with a 12-team playoff. He basically said, look, I think my theory is that nobody cares how you got the wins at the end of the season. It's that you got them. And basically his point was, we should load up, and they might still play. Notre Dame's a rivalry game, and they've got a big contract with them, so they might still play that one. But some of these other games, you know, North Carolina, Wake Forest, Ole Miss, that are on the schedule, TCU, I wouldn't be surprised if Purdue backs out of them. Now, he didn't say that. I'm putting words in his mouth there. But he's at this point, he's right. If you can get 3 wins if you're Purdue, why would you not play an FCS team, a MAC school, maybe 2 MAC schools, or, you know, just 1 Power 4 opponent now? Because the Big Ten is so loaded. When you add Oregon, USC, Washington, and UCLA into it, you've already got Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. There's no point. The Big Ten's good enough to where you don't have to load up your schedule in the non-conference to get in. And so, Jim, I'm slowly shifting over to your side. I don't know. I got to learn which direction I got to go to get closer to your box, but I think I'm starting to get on board with your philosophy now on not having to schedule these. It's bad for the fans, right? We all want to see great football and good football games from start to finish. And I think we'll still see some of that, but I don't want to see Minnesota play Rhode Island and win 50-0 every week.
I don't either, and I don't know if it'll change, but it leads to, you know, the conversation. I've heard several people say Notre Dame is now eliminated from the playoffs. They're out. I got news for you. They're not. Their schedule is such that it, first of all, is conceivable they could finish the season 11-1. They could run the table. And if they're 11-1, they're in. Okay. They are in. If their only two biggest games now appear to be USC and Louisville, if I have their schedule right. And USC is probably now, after USC beating LSU, it's a bigger game than probably it was looked at previously. But even if they split those two games and go 10-2, to, you know, Walter's point, it's going to be Notre Dame with 10 wins.
Yeah.
And the playoff committee has been notorious about its number of wins or number of losses. If throwing out Florida State last year, which was a special case, if you were undefeated, you're in the playoffs. If you lose 2 games, you were out. Yep. And then we do a tiebreaker among the 1-loss teams, and we give it to the Southeast Conference team first in a tiebreaker. Very easy. That's it. I just gave you 10 years of how the committee worked. This year, they're going to have to do more work. But, would you be surprised to see them give Notre Dame the benefit of the doubt as a 10-2 team and in a tiebreaker?
No, because the other thing that people don't want to acknowledge, or maybe I don't know how to say this, but what I'm going to say is this is still entertainment. It's still show business. It's still television. So if you can find a way to talk Notre Dame into the field, you're going to do it because they're going to get attention. Like, it's just how there are reasons why when certain teams are on the bubble in March Madness and it's a toss up, if Duke is on the bubble, Duke's getting in. They're not going to leave Duke or North Carolina or Kentucky out of the mix. I think the same thing applies here. And maybe they don't have enough, but if you get a win over Louisville or USC or both and finish 10-2, it's not a great schedule, but is it good enough to get them in? Probably is.
And that's just as you said, that's how it works. But if we look a little bit more at throughout the country, Notre Dame was the team that had the loss, okay? So and there's no excuse for losing to a MAC team. And by the way, this is the third time Marcus Freeman has lost a home game when he's been at least a 16.5-point favorite.
Do you know the 3 teams? Now it's Northern Illinois and Marshall. I don't know the third, though.
Stanford.
Okay.
that when Stanford had like a 3-9 season, it was a bad Stanford team, not a good Stanford team.
Right.
So, you know, there's and there's more going on now. I am not going to throw out that there's parity because we know who those very elite teams are. But if you look at some of the best teams in the country had scares. Oregon, that you mentioned earlier, against Boise State. Kansas State almost lost to Tulane. Alabama was in a one-score game deep into the fourth quarter with South Florida. So this is going on. It's going on all over the country, Dustin. So are we going to see more of those kind of games like Northern Illinois over Notre Dame?
I think so. I think we're going to see that because I think what a lot of people, and I mentioned this earlier in this show in a different segment, was there is something to be said for teams that stick together, for teams that are veteran and have kind of grown that chemistry. It can be really hard, especially if you're trying to piece together an offensive and defensive lines, for those groups to develop that chemistry in the span of 6 months, 8 months, as opposed to some teams that have been doing it for 3 or 4 years. There probably aren't a whole lot of Power Four teams that are knocking on Northern Illinois' door to get offensive linemen. Like, that's just but the fact that they know what each other's doing, they know where there's, and I don't know anything about Northern Illinois, so I'm just assuming that they've, in that game, they have some veteran offensive linemen just based on the very little bit that I saw. And so I do think that there's going to be something said for sticking together, for retaining your players. And the other part of this, Jim, is I had a conversation with someone over the weekend too. It almost makes me wonder, these kids at Northern Illinois, these kids at Bowling Green, they're not making a ton of money. They're playing for the love of the game. And I do think that there's also a level of, I've got my money. I think there's a level of, I don't want to resting on your laurels, but complacency. That's the word I was looking for. I think there's a level of complacency with some of these teams now that they are players, now that they are going to get money no matter how they perform, right? I think that's human nature. So I think that also is going to level the playing field.
Yes, I do think that's part of it. And as I mentioned earlier, with the transfer portal, is you're not going to have those guys sitting on the bench on a Power Four school anymore. Yeah. They'll go to a MAC school, or they'll go, say, from Ohio State, Dustin, to Syracuse.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Kyle McCord is lighting it. I wonder if Fran Brown is going to send Ryan Day some champagne. He's talked about it.
It would be funny if he did, but I think sometimes these guys with a pedigree, it's too easy to give up on them. When you're at Ohio State and you're just cycling in more talent every single year, I wonder if you make decisions a little bit too quick on a guy like Kyle McCord.
I think so. And I think the other thing too is I think that the recruiting process now has gotten to a point, like, even though the transfer portal is there and people can transfer whenever they want, I do think that there are some teams that recruit and are in the sense of, well, we don't necessarily need this guy, but we don't want Michigan to get him. We don't want Penn State to get him. And so I think that that's also going on too, where that some guys might get buried, you know, on the third on the depth chart, fourth on the depth chart, because some of these schools, they don't necessarily need a player at certain positions. They just don't want other teams to have them. So I think there's a lot of false promises happening as well.
Oh, I have no doubt the promises happen. And I'm sure there's some, hey, we don't want this talent to go elsewhere. But I think it's also an accumulation of talent where at quarterback, if you look, I did this comparison at Penn State, their quarterback recruiting versus Ohio State's quarterback recruiting. And until Drew Aller, the highest ranked quarterback that James Franklin had brought in was Sean Clifford, who was ranked number 200 in the country as far as players coming into the system. So meanwhile, in that same time span, I think Ohio State had about 10 players at quarterback who were considered top 100 players. So you know what? We'll accumulate the talent. We'll thin it out a bit. You know, a guy like Quinn Ewers comes and leaves. It doesn't matter. He's just replaced by another five-star guy.
Right. Right. And, yeah. You see that all the time. And that's, I kind of get it a little bit more with the quarterback position, cause you got to get that one right. But some of the, I don't know. It's a brave, even though it's been happening now for like 4 or 5 seasons, it still feels like a brave new world.
It sure does. All right. We've got more to go in quarter four. Stick around.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's Dustin, Big Ten writer for Sports Illustrated, with a bit of an emphasis on those Purdue and Indiana Hoosiers. So. When you hear a little bit extra information about those two teams, maybe just a touch of bias, you'll understand why. Right, Dustin?
That's right. That's right.
And it's okay, Dustin. I do the same thing here with the Nittany Lions and the blue and white. All right, let's I want to get to the upcoming week's schedule because there's a couple very interesting games. But before we get there, still just looking at the national picture, and there's a little more balance, I think, going on. Now, I've been one, and I've put my money where my mouth is. Trust me, I've bet the Southeast Conference teams a couple times and lost. I took Texas A&M against Notre Dame. I took LSU versus USC. But the fact is, Dustin, I went back and looked through 2 weeks. Southeast Conference teams versus other Power Four teams, if I got it right, they're only 4-6.
Ooh. Yeah, that I know in week one, I did not look at it this past week, but I do know in week one they were 1-3 in their major, you know, big time games. But yeah, Cal getting a win over Auburn. I think Oklahoma State was in a nail biter, but they pulled through against Arkansas. That was a good game. I think the only one where it felt like just kind of dominant was that NC State Tennessee game, where Tennessee just manhandled NC State from start to finish.
Yes. Well, Tennessee manhandled NC State, and Texas, of course, blew out Michigan.
I keep forgetting Texas is in the SEC.
Yes. But as you pointed out, Auburn lost to Cal. Arkansas lost to Oklahoma State, Mississippi State. They lost to Arizona State. So yep. You might say, hey, Mississippi State, they're not one of the premier teams, but neither is Arizona State. And, you know, in that first week, of course, we had Miami dominating Florida. We had USC beating LSU, Notre Dame over Texas A&M. And, you know, I came out with a total of 4-6. I think it's a case where Georgia is still Georgia. And yeah, we know who they are. But if you go a little deeper into the Southeast Conference, may not be quite what we're talking about. But this coming week, we do have Southeast Conference versus Big Ten again coming up. And that's Alabama at Wisconsin. I'm not sure I'm giving the Badgers much, if any, chance at all in this one. Alabama's a 16-point favorite on the road.
Yeah, there's been nothing that speaks to me from Wisconsin's side. Now, again, you mentioned earlier, Alabama was in a four-quarter game, for 3.5 quarters, whatever it was, with USF. So there's probably some concern on that end. But Wisconsin, through two games, has done showed me nothing, especially on the offensive side, that would say that they could beat a team like Alabama. Like, I don't think Tyler Van Dyke he's inconsistent. Their running game is meh. They started off hot against South Dakota, and then after South Dakota got into a rhythm defensively, they really couldn't move the ball. I think they scored 10, maybe 13 second-half points in that game. So I don't give Wisconsin much of a chance. I think their defense might be able to keep them in it for a half, but I think eventually Alabama is just going to flex its muscle and just run away with that one.
Again, and also going back to our discussion earlier about, does Alabama take on South Florida and just not have that same incentive?
Yeah.
Where I think this is a game where they're going up north, which is not typical.
Yeah.
Wisconsin is the name brand and it's Big Ten. I got a feeling Alabama will bring its A game for that one. A couple more interesting games is, you know, we had Oregon and Washington each leaving the Pac-12, joining the Big Ten. The two teams that were left out were Oregon State and Washington State. And I think it's fantastic that Oregon is still playing Oregon State. Washington is still playing Washington State. Both those games are happening this week, Dustin. I think it's going to be a bit of a test for them.
I think so, especially because Oregon, now I still don't know what we know about Washington because they played Weber State and they played Eastern Michigan. So I don't know what we're going to expect. This is going to be their first real test. That game's at Lumen Field in Seattle. And then Oregon State is at Reser Stadium in Corvallis. Oregon had trouble with Idaho and Boise State. So there's a real level of intrigue. And you got to think that the Oregon State people just want this one so bad after they were left in the dust in the Pac-2. This is going to be a really interesting matchup. I'm more interested in the Oregon State game than I am Washington State, because maybe it's just me. I didn't come in with high expectations for Washington through no fault of their own. They're going an entirely new staff, replacing 21 of 22 starters from last year's team. I think in time, Jed Fish will have that thing up and running. I just don't know what the expectation is this year, and I don't know that Washington State is that great either. But the Oregon was supposed to come in and run the Big Ten outside of Ohio State. They were supposed to be the clear-cut number two team, and maybe that will still be the case. But you beat Boise State by 3, had a real scare. You couldn't put your foot down against Idaho. Now you got to go on the road in a rivalry game against a program that's probably pretty mad at you. It's going to be a real test for Dan Lanning's team. That's going to be a really fun one.
I think so, too. It'll be interesting. And it's, you know, one game you don't look good. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
These are kids. Happens a second time against Boise State. Uh-oh, do I need to be concerned?
Yes.
So, you know, this is the time. It's time for the Ducks to quack or whatever it is they do.
Flying bee.
Yes. So it's time. All right. Those are the big game. Oh my goodness. How could I forget?
Oh, boy.
The Fighting Irish are at your Boilermakers.
Yeah. That's I think that's a game that's a little bit more interesting now. Notre Dame's still a 10.5, or they opened as a 10.5 point favorite. I don't know if it's shifted.
I had it at 12.5 today. 12,
oh boy. Okay. So that's going to be interesting. Purdue was without their best cornerback and probably their best wide receiver in week one against Indiana State, still won 49-0, but that's obviously a bad FCS program. Notre Dame, this could go one of two ways. I mean, either Notre Dame is going to limp into that game with some question marks and some concerns themselves, or Jim, they're going to go into that game really kind of angry and they just demoralize Purdue. I don't know what to expect. That's a big rivalry game. I think Purdue is going to be amped up to play that game. I think it'll be close, but I think that Notre Dame's going to eventually pull through and win that one. I don't think they're going to lose back-to-back games.
And as you pointed out, playing at Ross A, that's not an easy venue to play at, Dustin. Does Notre Dame outnumber do Notre Dame fans outnumber the Purdue fans when they come in?
I think it depends on the year. Usually not. But you know, the funny joke here in Indiana is that, I'm sorry, this is the joke that, you know, once fall starts, the Notre Dame fans put on their Notre Dame light fall jacket. And then once basketball season rolls around, they turn it inside out and break out their Indiana basketball winter coats. So they do outnumber Purdue fans in the state, but in the stadium, it's usually, they bring a good crowd, but I still think Purdue outnumbers them.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. You do every week your power rankings for the Big Ten. At the top, of course, is Ohio State. You flip 2 and 3. You have USC now ahead of Penn State. I don't think any Penn State fans are going to get too worked up about that after that performance about Bowling Green. But where were the big movers in your power rankings?
Yeah, I moved Illinois up. I think 6 spots it was to number 7, just behind Michigan. I think I moved Nebraska up into the top 5 because I think that they look like a better team than Michigan right now. But Illinois, I think that big win at home against Kansas, like I said, I think their offense is still really good, even though they didn't necessarily show it against Kansas. But I think their secondary now is better than I thought it would be. So I think they can surprise some people. The big fallers, I think I had Iowa drop 2 or 3 spots from last week after they lost a game they should have won to Iowa State. Had a 13-0 lead at halftime. Usually that'd be like trying to penetrate Fort Knox, trying to overcome a 13-0 Iowa deficit. Deficit, but dropped them. And then Maryland, I dropped 8 spots down to like, I think 16. I got to get my numbers right. An overreaction, maybe a bit, but I just think that the secondary looked bad and I thought that their offense would be able to scheme up Michigan State's defense, put a lot of points on the board, and the fact that they weren't makes me think that there are some concerns on both sides of the ball. I think Maryland can probably get back up into that 11 or 12 category, but this early in the season when you lose a conference game and you don't look good in that particular game, it's kind of hard to place you. So I have them 16. Like I said, that might be a touch of an overreaction right now, but we don't have a lot of losses to deal with, and I'm a proponent of, to some extent, the wins and losses have to matter.
Well, there's so few data points this early in the season that, you know, you've got to react to them. You mentioned the Iowa game, the Iowa lost. Boy, what a lost opportunity for them. We've talked all offseason about how easy and manageable their schedule was, with only Ohio State being the game that they would probably be an underdog. And they go and blow a 2-score lead against their rival, Iowa State. You didn't expect to see that from them.
No, at home. And then not only that, I know it was only a 2-point lead, but they had the ball with under 2 minutes to play. And you're forcing Iowa State to make a big play, a couple big plays late in the game, and the Cyclones did it. That was bizarre. I was on my way to a watch party, Jim, and my brother texted me, and he's like, do the Cyclones have life? And I almost had to pull the car over. But I called him up, and he gave me the play-by-play. I could not believe it. So I got home and watched the final 2 minutes of that game, because once they picked up that first down at the 2-minute mark, I thought game over. But it turns out Matt Campbell had a little magic left.
Hawkeyes are going to Hawkeye. All right. I sent you, I think, a picture this morning about the Big Ten. I'm going to ask you the question: How many playoff teams are in the Big Ten right now?
In my opinion, I think there are still 3. The 3 are Ohio State. I still think Penn State, because of I can't get over that win over West Virginia. I think that's a really solid win. I think they just kind of had a lackadaisical performance last week. I think USC and not Oregon, based on what I've seen. I think USC. I think we kind of flip-flopped them. We had major questions about USC, whether or not they'd fit in. We thought Oregon would hit the ground running. I think maybe we flipped it. USC looks like the playoff team right now.
All right. Very good take. Thanks, Dustin. Let's do it again next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.